Well, my next guest is coming to Thalia Hall this Saturday night. Artie Lang is bringing his hilarious stand-up to Chicago. Lang made he's made us laugh for years on stages all around the country in television shows like Mad TV, films like Dirty Work, Beer League. Lang's well known for his work on the Howard Stern Show, where he was co-host till 2009. Now, Lang is starring in the HBO hit Crashing, which is shooting season 2. And, of course, his podcast on ArtieQuitter.com. He just finished his 400th episode. Artie has had quite a life, from his days as a longshoreman in Jersey to a couple stints in rehab for drugs and alcohol to attempts to take his own life. And what's amazing is that we don't learn about these stories from the gossip pages or from the police blotters. No, Artie's been upfront. He's honest and real about his life. He's written two books, Too Fat to Fish, one of my favorites, and Crash and Burn, the latter dealing with the issues mentioned above. Like I said, Artie Lang will be performing at Thalia Hall this weekend, and he is my guest right now on The Download. Artie Lang, thanks for coming in. I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us tonight.
Oh, wow, man. That was I don't know whether to cry, laugh, or whatever, but that was a hell of an intro.
All right, so
that was really looking back.
You know, I'm a big fan of yours, man. I've been a longtime listener, and like I said, read the books. You've come through Chicago a lot in your stand-up career. I mean, what are some of the memories that stick out about playing this town?
Chicago. The first time I played Chicago was February. And that's the last time I was ever in Chicago in February. I was dating this girl, this petite little Italian girl from North Jersey. And I never saw anything like this. I was trying to impress her, so I was playing Zanies, you know. So I got a room at the Four Seasons to impress the girl, which means I broke even for the weekend. And we were walking by Lake Michigan to try to go get something to eat. And I never saw this before in my life. Because of the wind, they had ropes. You know, they have the ropes on the side of the building.
Yeah, right.
For old people to hang on to in case to make sure they don't get blown away. And we were the only two people under 40 holding on to the rope.
There you go.
And, I was on the rope, and she was on me. And I said, I just want Oprah doesn't come blowing by and kill us both.
Well,
I went to Zany's that night, and we went out to a blues club, and I almost got arrested trying to buy coke by where John Dillinger was shot.
You did all the Chicago things then. You did all the Chicago things. Well, I mean, let's talk about Crashing before we get into the show. I mean, you are great on Pete Holmes' Crashing, and you know, it's really a show about stand-up comedians coming up. It's obviously about Pete, but also about, you know, finding your comedy crew. And that's really what Pete's doing, is he's trying to find out, you know, comics around him and sort of, you know, explore the camaraderie. For you as a stand-up, do you relate to that? Do you relate to the show in the way that, you know, it's all about coming up through the business, but also about finding your friends?
Yeah. The show Crashing is very accurate in a lot of ways, but what Pete does is shows just the nice guys that you meet, and it's a very small percentage. The fact that he breaks me down and I let him sleep on my couch, and he's just some guy. I mean, you know, he looks like John Voight in the movie with Ratso Rizzo. I don't think I would ever. It would take years before I'd let him sleep on my couch. Put it that way. I don't care if he was homeless. If I walked by him and he had bugs coming out of his eyes, I would still go, "No, how's it going? Everything all right?" I don't think you find a lot of guys that trustworthy immediately. And I tell you, you don't find a lot of guys with the chops Pete has to ask immediately like that.
Yeah, right.
But they definitely are out there, and relationships like that do exist, where older guys help younger guys. I'm not a guy who helps younger guys.
Well, for you, Artie, I mean, you play the character of Artie Lang in the show. I mean, and we know that character, but how much of it is a character? I mean, just in your life as a stand-up, getting on stage, I mean, you have succeeded in the way that you've been, like, honest and real about your life. But how much of it is a character that you're playing on an HBO show?
Well, listen, Judd did this brilliant thing of that pizzeria scene. He just said that there was a script, but it was very loose. And at that point, I was still playing kind of a guy that wasn't totally me. And I don't think Judd wanted that. I don't know if Pete wanted that either, but Pete expected us to do the script. So before that scene, Judd said, listen, forget the script completely. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, this is going to be, I didn't even know at that point that the pilot was going to be named Artie Lang. At that point, I didn't know that. And he said, he goes, I really want this to be about you. And Judd read both of my books. And he said, just tell Pete about your life for the first take. And he had four cameras rolling, which is an advantage of being a powerful guy like that, with a lot of big, big budget. 35-millimeter film and four cameras rolling the entire time. And he said, just tell Pete about what it takes to get here and then what it takes to be someone like you who screws up along the way as a cautionary tale. And I did, and 15 minutes later, the judge said cut, and we moved on. We did the entire scene in that take.
That's amazing. And it's so real.
He said, we got enough. And I said, well, it's good. Now it's about me, you know.
You know, I mean, that's what has always set you apart and the project that you've worked on, but you've had this ability to be honest on stage. I mean, is that something you have to learn, you know, through being a comedian at the beginning, were you less interested in telling people about your story or who you were? As you got older, did it just sort of, that became your act in the way that you are able to be honest on stage and you have to be because of everything that's happened to you?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, David Letterman, I know, once said in an interview, he said, no man is really funny until they're like 35, because you've experienced life and you get a certain amount of cynicism and all that stuff. I mean, there's people like Eddie Murphy who were so insanely talented with impressions and stuff like that. And Chappelle, I mean, I was, in town when Chappelle came up, and he just had this very unique worldly sense about stuff. But mostly, you got to experience life to be funny, you know. And it hit me, what you're talking about hit me around 28, 29, when I had done a lot of screwing up and had a lot of tragedy that was both my fault and not my fault happened in my life, to where I said on stage one night, you know, I'll just talk about, you know, the guards and how they treated me in L.A. County when I got arrested. And I did this in L.A., and it destroyed, I guess, a lot of people in that crowd in L.A. County. Being handcuffed to this one kid for 6 hours while I was getting processed and all this stuff. And, you know, it just flowed out of me. That night I went back to the hotel, and I really punched it up. I added jokes to the story. And I couldn't do anything different than that from then on, you know.
You know, it's just interesting because you've lived such really kind of a rock and roll lifestyle with all the comedy you've done, but also the excess that's been in your life that you've written about and you've been upfront about. You know, is there something about the business, the business of being in comedy that sort of attracts addiction, codependency, the excess? Talk about that. Talk about the idea. Would you be someone who had the same problems in your life if you were working behind a desk in a cubicle being an accountant?
Well, it's funny, you know. People say I was never going to be an office guy because I didn't go to college. That wasn't my style. But I was a longshoreman on the port in Newark for 2 years. In the times I would have been in college struggling, and that's not a job you find in the paper. You know, it was a great job. I worked with a lot of characters, and I got some stand up from that. People say, if you stayed there, you probably wouldn't have had the drug issues. And to me, that was my version of a cubicle, like the longshoreman thing. I would have been worse. I would, because I wouldn't have been doing what I loved. I got this dream job, and I still, you know, wanted to get high. And both ways. Like if I had a miserable night on stage and bombed, I wanted to get messed up because it was a way to get the blues away. And if I had a great night, it was a way to celebrate. If I wasn't doing that dream job, and like what you're talking about, had the cubicle thing, I would have been way worse because it always would have been bad. It never would have been good or anything. And I would have self-medicated on that level in a way. I more so than I do now, you know.
You've had an amazing run with your podcast. I mean, 400 episodes. Congratulations on that. And I mean, and the work that you've done to be, you know, both in podcasts, but also in radio with Howard, you know, to be a part of that crew and to think about the amount of the legends that have come through that show, Howard show, other places, what's it mean to you to, even though, you know, you've had your ups and downs with the relationships, what's it mean to be a part of, to be a part of that family, to be a part of, the network that really has done better than so many other media entities in the entire world.
Right. Yeah, well, listen, I mean, you know, it's really nice to have a guy, you know, in your position, a real successful GN and stuff, say something like that. A lot of guys don't admit that out loud. That, you know, Howard, when he left for Satellite, when we left, it was a real, real gut changer for radio.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that powerful and that big, and to be a part of that was insane. For me personally, it was like becoming a U.S. senator. I mean, the neighborhood I came from, and my father turned me on to the show. I was 13 years old in the summer of 82, and he came home from working, and he was, you know, he climbed roofs, and he said, "Tomorrow you're coming to work with me, and I just want you to hear this guy on the radio." And it was a bonding thing. I worked with him that whole summer, helping him install the antennas, and we ate lunch listening to Howard. And me and my father laughed like crazy together at that. Besides baseball, Stern was, in a way, the thing we bonded on the most. My father fell and became a quadriplegic when I was 18. He fell off a roof. The only thing that made him laugh was Howard. You know, so when he came back from rehab, I made sure he had a radio right there. And so if he, when he died, when I was 22, I was basically just a drunk going from loser job to loser job, getting arrested. And I don't know what was going on in his head about the future of his kid, but it must have been bad. If I'm telling you, if there is a way for an afterlife,
yeah.
And he knows that I became the co-host of the Howard Stern Show, I got to tell you, Justin, he's going to go crazy.
I mean, hey, that's amazing.
I got some stuff to tell you, man.
Exactly. Well, Artie Lang is going to be at Thalia Hall this weekend on the 1st down at Thalia Hall. It's amazing to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking some time out. Again, go see Artie. It's awesome when he comes through Chicago. And continued success with your stand-up as well as your role in Crashing and, of course, your podcast. Artie Lang, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin. Those were real heartfelt questions. I appreciate it, man.